And the weather today in Lincoln, highs of 10 degrees centigrade, lows of 4 degrees centigrade. There's a good deal of cloud around, but there'll be sunshine and showers throughout the day. Time now to obviously celebrate the joys of National Smile Month, but also to address the issues about panicking. We've already heard from Ian Lennox about how he's got a major fear of the dentist, and it's the lack of anaesthetic and the potential challenges that we've actually got there. Well, to find out why two-thirds of British folk are scared of the dentist, we're delighted to welcome two wonderful souls. First of all, Dr. Nigel Carter, OBE, the Chief Executive Officer of the Oral Health Foundation. Good morning, Nigel.
Good morning.
And the wonderful Dr. Uchenna Okoye, Oral B Ambassador and Clinical Director at London Smiling Dental Group. Good morning, Uchenna.
Hi there.
Uchenna, we've heard all sorts of nightmare stories, and there are those of us who remember the movie Marathon Man and the line, is it safe, and the torture and the scenarios of that. Are these all things that feed into our irrational fear of our regular annual checkup?
Absolutely. And a lot of people don't know, I'm personally actually a dental phobic, which is hilarious, as a dentist myself. But it comes from, you know, kind of poor, just being afraid when I was a kid, things hurting. So my mind knows it doesn't hurt, but it becomes a bit of a phobia. You've got no control of it, which is why prevention is so important. Certainly, I don't want to get any fillings, and a lot of my patients don't either.
Indeed. I mean, it's not as though you're having dental surgeries equipped with spiders and snakes and various other sort of scary things. It's a different line entirely.
Some people, it's worse than that. Lots of patients tell me that they'd rather have 100 babies than come to the dentist, which for any woman that's had a child, you know that's just crazy.
Right. 100 babies rather than go to the dentist. Hannah Brown in the studio. I know you haven't had one, as far as I'm aware, as yet.
No.
But yeah, you kind of have said perfect smile. No fears whatsoever.
No, I don't have any fears of the dentist of going, personally. But one thing I do agree with is on the stats that we have in front of me is that the 26 people worried about the cost is... I have been apprehensive about that because I know the daily check, the checkup's quite low, but I feel looking at the post that they had there, it jumps quite quickly to becoming quite high as soon as you need more work done to your teeth. And since I've turned over 18 and now I have to pay, that has been a worry on my mind about going because it's just... Nigel, I'm not scared of the pain.
Nigel, would you like to pick that up? Is it a case of it's the fear of the pain that could be caused to the wallet, perhaps?
I think that's one of the factors, and various surveys that we've done over the years with National Smile Month have shown cost as a definite barrier to people attending. I think one thing to say there is if people put it off, they're likely to need more work doing and it's going to cost them more. So as Uchenna was saying, prevention's far better and getting in there early is far better than actually leaving things, letting them build up, and you might get larger costs. But actually, for your listeners out there who haven't been for a long time, we generally find when people come in, they need much less doing than it was anticipating in their mind, and as a result, it ends up costing them less. And it's a small price to pay to be pain-free. And we're very fortunate having an excellent dental system in the UK. I'm also involved with some bodies in Europe, and it's certainly not the case in a lot of other countries in Europe with our lowering cost and of a far higher quality.
And I think it's certainly for me as a dentist, my ideal is that patients need less of me. They just come in and, I look at things and I bless them and they go off and everybody's happy. So which is why the tools that you use is so important. So, at London Smiling, what I recommend is actually one using an electric toothbrush, and the one that I use is the Oral-B one because it's the one that's got the best research. And then if you combine that with their toothpaste, it's got a key ingredient, which is the thing that I'm most excited about, called stannous fluoride. And everyone always knows about fluoride. It's good for prevention and strengthening your teeth. But the stannous is a bit like having Teflon coating on your teeth. So it just helps protect it from all the acid attack and the plaque bacteria. So if you're using that as a combination, it means that, you're doing the right thing.
I normally do an annual visit to the dentist, which is okay for that. I'll tell you something which I'm pleased hasn't gone, and I never got into, Jenna, and this is a sort of little bit now, flossing.
Oh, Oh, the F word.
Yeah.
That's what my patients call it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I tried, but I'm not a flosser. I mean, Ben, are you a flosser?
No, well, I've got floss at home, but I'm not a regular flosser.
No.
If it needs flossing, I'll floss it. But it's not. I think it takes up a lot of time. That's the problem. You need a good 10 minutes on your hands to actually.
The other thing.
But would you rather do the 10 minutes or
It's trying to go over that hurdle and getting into a habit. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's trying to get into that habit. I would do it if I got into the habit of doing it. But it's just getting into that habit of actually being able to do it for that moment.
Although, Ben, you share this whole notion, no real fear of dentists. Share with us the time when you were 10 years old and you had a...
It's my first filling,
First filling,
and I had no anaesthetic.
Yes, that's what happened to me.
And I can't describe the pain. It's indescribable. But it's put me off. And every time I go to the dentist now, it makes me so nerve-wracking going, because it always reminds you of that first time. And obviously, I've had some since, but they don't obviously have the same pain feeling as that, because they were painless. It's you still think to that first time, and you still think back to it.
Yeah, you don't remember. You know, the best part is when you've left. So I totally understand it, and I think for people that are really scared of dentists, because actually in your area the stats show that I know we said 26% of people are afraid of costs, but actually 42% of them are afraid of pain. So what you're saying is really important. So I'm glad you're saying, confirming that 21st century dentistry now can be painless. And I'm sure Nigel agrees with that.
Yeah, and I think it's very much something that we have this memory. Some people have got bad memories of childhood. It's very important not to pass the fear of dentist on to your children. And that's very often what happens. I remember on very many occasions a child would come in quite happy, sit in the chair, maybe even have their first filling, get up at the end, and the mother would say, "Well, that didn't hurt at all, did it?" And that's the first time that it's ever occurred to the child that there might be anything unpleasant about the experience at all. So if you have got any fear, don't pass it on to your children. As Eugenia says, 21st century dentistry is virtually pain-free. Let's face it, it's probably never going to be the most pleasant experience we have, but there's really no reason for not getting along there. So make sure your children go, and don't pass on your own fears, which very often we recognise are irrational, to them.
So avoiding any screenings of Little Shop of Horrors with the dentist in the Marathon Man scenario, or indeed any kind of Wyatt Earp, or indeed Doc Holliday image is not great in terms of setting the scene.
Not at all. Somebody needs to write a sexy movie about dentistry to kind of like get rid of all those Marathon Man and the rest of it. You know, we need something different.
Hannah, clearly that could be a little challenge you could take up over the summer months, really. A nice movie that's positive, dentistry in a positive light, which is great. Where can people go to for further information to find out about the things we've been talking about today, vis-a-vis, obviously, Good Oral Health, the Oral Health Foundation, and indeed, obviously, Oral-B work as well?
Yes, for Oral Health Foundation, you can go along to dentalhealth.org or to the National Smile Month site at nationalsmilemonth.org.
Splendid. And two final questions for your good souls, Nigel and Uchenna. Have you had a reasonably interesting and happy, smiling almost, is it a smiley face telephonic link today? Has it been okay for you?
Can you tell? I'm grinning down the airway.
Oh, that's a round of applause for Dr. Nigel Carter and Dr. Uchenna Okoye. And it's time to smile.
Smile.
New research has revealed that over a third of new mums think that they're more anxious than their partner, and more than a third of those don't ask for help because they don't want to look like neurotic mothers. Now, clearly, in this whole aspect of postnatal care and a variety of other factors, we don't want to have young mums being filled with anxiety and self-doubt and so on. And to address this issue, we have the author of the fantastic Positive Birth book, the legendary Millie Hill. Good morning, Millie. How are you?
Good morning. I'm very well. Thanks for inviting me.
Delighted to touch base with yourself. Now, you're going to be taking place or appearing at the baby show between the 19th to the 21st of May at the NEC in Birmingham. But let's just talk about this notion that, you know, clearly, again, even in the 21st century, we would have maybe thought we'd kind of discovered best ways to actually cope with stresses and strains. No, actually, new mums can actually find their lives full of anxiety, self-doubt and pressures.
Yeah, well, you know, as a mum myself, this doesn't really surprise me to hear this because I personally found new motherhood really anxiety provoking. You know, first of all, it's a completely new role that you don't really know anything about. So like any new job, it's going to make you feel a bit nervous and anxious and worried that you're getting things right. But also added to that, you've brought home a baby, a human being who's completely dependent on you for their survival. And I think that can make you feel tremendously anxious, tremendously worried that you just haven't got a clue what you're doing. You don't have much experience of babies and being around babies when you have your first one.
We live in an age of social media for good or ill, and many people would say it's for ill, but when you've got your Facebook, you've got your Instagrams, you've got your Twitter and so on, does social media actually add more pressure to this whole scenario where, in essence, you don't have that time to just literally go home with your child and do the sort of nurturing thing without feeling you have to take a selfie and images and all sorts of other aspects?
I don't think social media is completely to blame. I think part of the problem is that we live in a very isolated culture now where new mums are just doing everything in their house by themselves and they haven't got anyone else to connect to. There's no sense of community anymore. And I think social media can make us feel, you know, anxious and depressed if we look at the pictures of the, you know, the mums looking immaculate in their immaculate homes with their, you know, babies dressed in beautiful outfits. And I personally, you know, when I see pictures like that, I just think, oh God, what am I doing wrong? But on the other hand, you know, social media can be a fantastic way when you are isolated and you are stuck in your house by yourself to connect with other adults, to talk to them. And often the posts that go viral are the ones where mums are saying how hard they're finding it. And that can be so refreshing and so helpful when you feel that you're alone and you feel that sort of guilt of like, why aren't I enjoying this? Why am I finding this so hard? When somebody else admits it and it really goes viral, you know, you think, oh, thank goodness, you know, it's not me. Everybody feels like this.
What would be your number? Well, three top tips for either young mums listening to this, or mothers per se, or indeed fathers. Let's face it, they can also have a stressful time as well in a different sort of way. What would be your top tips to actually just go through those initial few weeks, indeed few years, up until obviously 18 years have passed and you move on to an older generation?
Well, I think that one thing that people can do is make plans when they're pregnant. Think about the postnatal period. You know, it can be, we're very anxious about birth these days, and we're very focused on birth. But obviously, it's a really good idea, and I talk about in my book about not just making a birth plan, but making a postnatal plan as well. So think about how you're going to survive those first few weeks and months. Get things in place. Fill your freezer with, you know, casserole, soups and stews. Reach out to people around you and find out how they can practically help. Find out what groups are in your area. Find out what support networks there are. If you want to breastfeed, find out what kind of breastfeeding support there is and get everything in place before you have the baby and think about, what am I going to do in week four or week five when I'm really struggling?
We've already mentioned your ACE book, the Positive Birth book, but is there anywhere else, possibly online, that you'd recommend folks should actually go to, Millie, for further information and indeed reassurance?
Well, there are lots of places online where you can find reassurance and help. I run an organisation called the Positive Birth Movement where pregnant women can go and connect with other women online and in a network of real life groups. If you go to thebabyshow.co.uk, you'll find lots of information about the baby show, which is happening this Friday, Saturday and Sunday. There'll be loads of experts on hand there to talk to people about parenting choices and approaches, and also to you know, do lots of really exciting shopping for your new arrival.
Millie, you obviously provided loads of information there, which obviously helps the next generation develop, as indeed we knew you would. Many thanks indeed, and we look forward to hopefully connecting with you in the not-too-distant future. Millie Hill, many thanks indeed.
Thank you so much.
We'll hope to be squeezing in some dementia adventure as well before the end of the programme. But Eva MacDonald is
Hello.
Here, or should we say Ava, or Eva MacDonald.
Eva.
It's all very important. We've been having a pronunciation exercise in terms of how do you say pasta?
Oh, God.
No, it's pasty.
Pasty.
People in Cornwall say pasty. That means it's pasty.
I'm just going to stay quiet. She's just being weird.
In Lincoln, it is pasty. Wonderful. I just thought it was duck, you know, still never mind. It's all part and parcel of the wonderful world. William said, well, maybe with us, we don't know as yet, but we're going to squeeze in a little touch about snack squads. Are you a snacker, Eva?
No, I have my three balanced meals a day.
Wow, and so you don't have a secret stash of almonds.
I can tell you're not a student.
Good snack.
And Ben, are you?
I've been known time to time.
And Hannah?
I try not to, but it sometimes happens, especially around this time of year with deadlines and exams.
There is a way in which you can hashtag snack support to actually bond in a kind of thing.
Bond with people.
Sort of group snacking scenario to work that, which we're going to hear
snack
about.
Snack together.
Exactly. This is the whole thing. It's kind of celebrates that whole side of things by two fine folk who've been involved with the whole snack squad scenario. Hashtag snack squad. Very important. Eva, how's the driving going?
It's okay, thank you. I've not run over anything yet, so it's all going swell.
This is, in case you're wondering, not carriage driving. It's not horse and carriage driving. Eva is genuinely behind the horseless carriage and has been building up the skill sets that you actually need to drive a car, because you're not waiting for driverless cars. You're going to drive that car.
A driverless car would be nice. You just sit in it.
Well, I doubt it's going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. It's apparently going to happen, but...
It's 21 minutes past 9 o'clock on a Thursday morning in May in Lincoln and presumably the rest of the world as well. To take us round to snacks, a little touch of candy. Who writes these links? Who writes these links, Ben? I mean, who writes the links?
I was there to witness Candice's in a business. She wants the boys to notice her rainbows. Different men, and I say, liberation, sons and daughters, the bush is hot, but in the hole there's water, you can get some when they give it.
Exercise is good for you, laziness is not, is something we've consistently been talking about. And also, snacking is a scenario which we can go into. As far as unhealthy snacking is concerned, not good at all. Obviously, in the month of May, many of us actually start to wear lighter clothes and so on. Let's get to the bottom line. To address the whole issue of how better snacks can help you become healthier and happier, and also how hashtag snack squad can help, we've got two fantastic folks. Dynamic duo, fitness expert Lloyd Bridger. Good morning, Lloyd.
Hey, how you doing?
Very well indeed. And James Exton from LDN Muscle. Good morning, James.
Good morning to you.
If we can come to you first, Lloyd, just share with us this whole notion of healthy snacking. Because, you know, more and more we're sort of getting into unhealthy snacking and so on, which is not good. Almonds are supposedly very good for you. What's the best way forward as far as keeping us healthy with the fuel that we're taking in?
Well, it really depends on feeling yourself for the amount you're doing as well. This thing, a lot of us, we're becoming more and more sedentary. We're doing less. So, and we're becoming busier also while we're doing less, sitting at desks all day. So we end up just reaching for things which are easy and quick, things in wrappers, you know, chocolate bars, these sorts of things. Whereas we should be, you know, aiming for more nutrient dense stuff such as kiwis, other fresh fruits as well. These are lower in calories, which are good if you're being less active, but also you can use them as part of higher calorie smoothies, shakes, etc. when you are being more active. So you're getting those micronutrients in as well, rather than having less calorie dense, high energy food, which we don't really want, we want to avoid.
Zespri Sun Gold has recently shown in their survey that 71% have actually said that they engage in activities and also follow a healthy diet primarily as a team because it motivates them to reach their goals. Is that something which you would agree with from your own perspective, James?
Yes, most definitely. I mean, people are, first of all, accountable when they're in a team, which helps massively because they know they've got more than one set of eyes on them, sort of giving them a nudge if they're falling off the bandwagon, so to speak. And of course, it's a great way to give a bit of positivity to a peer, a friend, or even a partner. So yeah, working in teams really is beneficial to people. I think they find that it's a lot easier to adhere to.
Fascinated by the term squad goals. Perhaps it's your Royal Marine experience, Lloyd, coming out from that point of view, but it's a different line, perhaps. Just in terms of the actual line forward, you've made some very key suggestions. Where else can people go to find out further details about, obviously, how do they get hold of Zespri Sun Gold?
It's available in all mainstream supermarkets in May, so it's nice and easily accessible. Everyone's got a supermarket, I'm sure, near their office or their workplace. So you don't have to resort to something unhealthy from a vending machine. It's easily accessible and affordable.
And hashtag Snack Squad, is that the go-to handle to actually look for as far as social media is concerned?
Yeah, definitely. We're encouraging everyone to be part of a team, as we spoke about earlier. It's obviously beneficial. So, yeah, use the hashtag Snack Squad to join a sort of digital community as well as those close to you.
It's been brief, it's been effective, as we'd expect from both your good self, James Exton, and Lloyd Bridger. Many thanks indeed. And we'll just stay healthy and keep snacking, but only snacking on healthy foods. Many thanks, gentlemen.
Thanks for the time. Thank you.
Perfect introduction to our ace snackster extraordinaire and general award-winning soul. Book of the Year. Eggs or Anarchy, Book of the Year. William Sitwell's back. Yay! Exactly. I'm sorry, we need a bit more. Oh, please, Eva and Hannah and Ben. Come on. Yeah, exactly. Have this live scenario coming together. Ben, we've already spoken about William Sitwell with reference to Pippa Middleton earlier in the production with Richard Fitzwilliams. It's all right, William. It wasn't anything salacious. It was just...
Have you got your connection, that was all.
Have you got an invite to the wedding? He can't say. I know. What could be happening?
It's a taboo topic.
Exactly. I mean, again, if it's no ring, no bring, who knows what could be happening there? But still, I still think it's no ring, no bling. Anyway, still. Ben, thoughts or words for Richard about his...
William?
For William, indeed.
No, William, I was just having a little parade through your Instagram.
As he does.
Parade? And, parade?
Yeah, well, more so at the nice-looking dish at the Ned. Was it the Ned? You had, it's a very floral meal you had there, by the looks of things.
That is a poke, or a pokey, depending on how you pronounce it. It's a bowl of Asian goodness. And the Ned is an extraordinary, I don't know what it is really. It's a new Soho House collaboration with a big American hotel group. There are 8 restaurants on the ground floor. This is the old Midland Bank that Ned Lutyens, as he was known to his pals, built. I think it took him 20 years between the wars. And he spent $100 million on it. And Soho House and their American partners have spent $200 million. And it's now a club, a hotel. It's got 8 restaurants on the ground floor. It's sort of the poshest food court on the planet. And I was delving my way into a pokey with a Instagram sensation whose name is Clerkenwell Boy, who's helping write their menus. So, yeah, I was just, having a mooch around, eating at lunch.
Clerkenwell Boy. It's like a superhero for the 21st century in gastronomic terms. As Greg Wallace might have said...
Hello, this is Greg Wallace, and you're listening to William Sitwell on Siren. The man's far too posh.
But we talk about posh and poshness. William, you raised the issue here in terms of, is it poke or is it pokey? Eva, bless her, in the studio at present. Morning, Eva, once again.
Hello.
Eva's a little bit confused because, Eva, when you actually have a pasty, pasty.
Pasty,
and you have part. Now, we're confused about this, William, so we thought we'd go to you as the guest. Are you a pasty person or a pasty person?
What are you talking about? You've just lost it. What are you talking about?
In terms of the pronunciation, William, that's because you said poke, pokey, past, 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 pasty.
Well, pasta is pasta.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
A pasty is a pasty.
Fine.
There's no such thing as a pasty or pasta.
Fine.
It depends. Even if you're from even southern toffs like myself. Say pasta. We don't say pasta. Right? And even northern oiks, such as all your, well, you're not quite there because you're in the Midlands, really, aren't you? wouldn't say pasta. Wouldn't say pasta. The word is pasta and it's a pasty.
Fine. I think we've got that sorted. We're all clear now. But Eva, if you want to maintain the sort of stance, then you continue doing it, my girl, because it could set a whole new trend.
Wonderful. She won't get fed. She won't get fed. I mean, could you go into another Italian place and ask for a pizza? And,
Pizza. Pizza.
Exactly.
It's well said.
Did you ask for a glass of wheat wean?
It's white wine, dry white wine, but not wheat wean. I mean, it's very important.
Exactly.
These are critical aspects.
There's reasons for pronunciations, and it's in order for us to be able to communicate with our fellow man or woman. So I suggest if you want to get ahead, get with the program. I mean, there's accents, and they're just getting things. There's accents, and they're just getting things wrong. So get with it, women.
And there we are. It happens. This is one of the reasons why, as we said in discussions with Sir Royce, the winner, of course, of Eggs or Anarchy, sometimes, it's just William telling it like it is. Hannah, any thoughts or questions for yourself?
But once I get my head round the pasty.
I'll ask on your behalf, Hannah. Hannah, in a few moments, how many minutes is it before your exam?
I've got to meet there at 10:30. It's not starting then.
So it's about an hour away?
Yes.
But bottom line, William, Hannah is about to go for her shorthand examination, and she's looking to get to 80 words. So what's the motivation speech, William, that you can provide to ensure that Hannah from Harwich actually will be successful in getting her 80 words a minute shorthand?
I just use a tape recorder.
I wish I could. But
it's not legally admissible.
Yeah, for me to get my NCTJ diploma, I want to get higher. In my shorthand.
Meanwhile, last week we were talking about insects. Has that progressed any further, William, in terms of the demand for greater protein, greater food, greater sort of inclusion of insects in various items?
I've seen a complete revolution on the streets and in the towns and cities of Britain. Since I was on your show last week, everyone has started to eat locusts and crickets. It's been astonishing. The power of your village radio station.
Well,
quite extraordinary.
Sometimes, like yourself, I'm just sort of equally amazed at the different dimensions we cross over. It's like a surreal exploration of life, the universe, and pronunciation. Ben, anything else you want to share?
Yeah, I was just going to say to William, is there any particular food trends we should be looking out for at the minute?
I can only tell you that you should pay me.
in the form of pasty or pasties?
It's a northern currency we can work through.
I think we're all after what you might call a quality poke, nice. By which I mean, of course, a good bowl of Asian goodness with avocado, sushi rice, tuna, and other bits and pieces. So yeah, good pokes.
And then look at the insects as well. Is insects on the side? Are we separating.
Well, yeah, you could dry them and drizzle them on for a little bit of added crunch. Yeah, be my guest.
And I suspect, given that we always like to have the actuality, William, you're indoors for a change. You're not actually in the streets of London.
How do you know I'm indoors?
I just have a sense.
There's no motorbikes going past.
Unless, of course, suddenly the streets of London have gone very, very quiet indeed, like an old episode of the John Steed Avengers series.
That's exactly what's happened, yes.
Could happen. We're going to the Forest of Dean in a matter of moments to actually speak to Alan Stevens. He's going to be talking about his views on the latest incarnation and series of Doctor Who. William, what does the rest of the day have in store for your good self? Is it more snacking, general scenario, prepping for life, the universe? Oh, actually, we had Greg Wallace doing the little ident. Did you think the right person won MasterChef after all?
Yeah, I think so. I think she was a worthy contender. I think she certainly cooked well for me when I was lucky enough to taste her food on that particular show. I think Giovanna and the other girls also, you know, did themselves proud. I thought, she was a worthy winner.
And a doctor as well. So there we are. With a mission to actually reform food and nutrition in the National Health Service.
Well, the key thing there is not to snack. You know, don't eat between meals. And anyone tells you otherwise, just whack a pasta throw a pasty at them.
Exactly. Or a pasty. It's wonderful. It's genius stuff. Last two questions for William, please. Hannah.
Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this morning?
I think I haven't had so much fun since my grandmother died.
Yeah, well, Ben's obviously gone now. He's clearly sort of lost. He's lost the whole scenario with probably the best ever response we've had. I mean, William Coles will be beside himself in Edinburgh. Carry on, Hannah. Hold it together.
Will he be joining us again soon?
Who knows?
It will happen. Honestly, it will. Round of applause for William Sitwell, please. Yay!
Time goes by, as we all know, naturally. People come and people go, naturally. Let's be natural.
are those wonderful Ruttles. Smooth Beetle Band, of course, created by Eric Idle, Neil Innes, and others. Let's be natural. And where more natural can you be than the Forest of Dean? Eh, Alan Stevens?
Yes, it's very natural here. Trees and grass and sheep and deer and wild boar.
Well, there we are. Having sort of set the scene with William Sitwell, we feel we've moved over now so that Hannah Brown can finally say those immortal words, having had her prize-winning edition of...
Warp, warp.
There you are, you see. That's the thing. Hannah Brown has warp, warp. Have you managed to work your way through the Alan Stevens and Fiona Moore articles in aforementioned?
I've read some of it. The article about the mechanical planet recording, how it was made, which I think was written by Fiona.
That's right, yeah.
Yes, I managed to get through that. It's going to be my summer read because obviously, unfortunately, with deadlines, I prioritise them, but it's sitting on my desk in Pride of Place waiting for me to fully delve into.
Have you listened to the actual audio itself?
That is for my car journey home with my mum.
That's, you see, it's all being panned out, you see, here.
It's looking forward to the summer, you know, the sunshine and Doctor Who.
It's like a summer special in many ways, Alan, that you've provided. A wonderful summer special. It's great. You have clearly, Ben Lewis, nailed your colours to the mast, and you're very much Gerry Anderson as opposed to Doctor Who. I think that came across yesterday.
Oh yeah.
We rolled the idea with Jamie out of talking about his work with Big Finish and directing Doctor Who. No, it was very much focused on 50 years of Captain Scarlet.
Yeah.
That's okay. Hannah, have you been catching the Peter Capaldi series?
Oh yes. Yes.
So
very much.
I don't know if you followed Alan, obviously, as Doctor Who scholar, has been addressing these kind of things. Eva has also nailed her proverbial colours to the mast insofar as since David Tennant left.
Yeah, well I don't really watch Doctor Who anymore, to be honest. Like the last episode I watched was the 11th Hour.
I'm not judging.
They're just missing out on amazing television.
Oh, no. I watched 10 minutes of, what was it, episode 2? The one with
the
that?
The smile.
The smile. Emoji. Honestly, I've never wasted so much time in all my life.
I think you should leave now, Ben.
you see where...
That's from someone who is a fan of Anderson?
Yeah. I don't know what you're saying. Honestly, honestly,
mate.
Yeah, but even you admitted yourself, Alan, it wasn't a very good series.
What? Sorry, what are you talking about? Terrahawks?
No. I'm on about Doctor Who.
The Doctor Who episode.
Yeah. This recent series.
He's working. So we're only just approaching halfway. We're at episode 4. Hannah, what are your views so far in terms of how it's been going?
I really enjoyed this series. Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting. I really love the new companion. I think she is amazing, and yeah, discussing it with my fellow Doctor Who friends, and we're all enjoying it.
So last week, of course, we were talking about not knock, etc. A little bit of wood there coming across there, a little bit of actuality, a bit of.
But you're going to tell a joke, then.
Did you think so? Yeah, no.
Well, it is knock knock. Who's there? Who's in the vault?
So who is in the vault? Now, of course, it's oxygen, and the Doctor has gone sightless.
Mm.
Alan,
spoiler alert.
David J. Howe has already gone on record on social media saying it was absolutely amazing, fantastic, you know, really over the moon with the whole sort of sequence. And in fact, the Stone Tapes featured one of the archivists from the Doctor Who exhibition in Cardiff, who was joining us on the whole sequence for the Stone Tapes. But ultimately, those opinions do not matter a hill of beans in the world when it comes to the CaldorCity.com magic bullet input of yourself, Alan Stevens.
Yeah, I thought it was all right. Yeah, I thought it was probably the best episode they've shown so far. I mean, again, as with all New Who, it borrows heavily from itself. You know, there was various things of, you know, zombie astronauts and various things from various other stories, but it worked and had a kind of anti-capitalist message. And also, I mean, when you hear about various corporate figures wanting to privatise water and all that stuff, you think, yeah, I can actually believe it. You know, on a space station, they might very well privatise air. In any air that they don't like, they evacuate into space, and you've got to wear their special suits and pay a premium rate for a certain amount of units of air to breathe. I can believe that. And certainly, the various things that happen, you know, in the third world concerning their workforce, I can actually believe that they may very well value plant over people. So yeah, kind of an interesting message, and as it fits into the grand narrative of things, I'm still not really sure. I mean, what was that, episode 5, was it?
It was episode 5.
Yeah, so I mean, it's difficult to it's difficult to judge how because you know you can have a you can have a series of individually good episodes, but an overall you know sort of arc that doesn't work, or you can have a pretty good arc or a very good final episode and make a fairly mediocre series good. So it's I can't really say you know. It the program on the one hand, its pacing is much better than it has in the past. It's much slower and not as frenetic, explanations gabbled at it 40 miles an hour type thing, which I think is I think everyone's sort of relieved about that. Really, it's probably the influence of Icelandic drama that's slowed it down a bit. And yeah, I think also that the companion is the key. If you like the companion, then you've got an end of a show, and I don't think that the previous one was. She was more of a walking plot device than a person you could actually relate to. So Bill is a great improvement, and I think that once you can relate to the characters, then sometimes even a fairly mediocre episode can get a pass because you know you like the people involved. Whereas if you don't like the characters, then even very good episodes are immediately tainted by the fact that you hate a particular companion or a particular doctor. I mean, about the Tennant era, I mean, I couldn't stand Tennant, and so that kind of, like, tainted the entire era for me. Whereas I can also see it, someone who thought he was wonderful would be completely opposite mindset and think, oh, well, you know, that without Tennant, the show is nothing. But, you know, I think it's all down to... there's a big element of personal choice in this, isn't there, at the end of the day? So I'd give the story, this one, probably 8 out of 10.
Mm-hmm. Eva, has that persuaded you at all to give Capaldi a chance? Or is it a case of, no, I'm off to Euro Disney in Paris very shortly, and frankly, I'm not interested.
I'll go with the Disney, but no,
we're just...
You're
Disney?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
We had a whole conversation about this, Ben, earlier.
Exactly.
Oh, I completely missed it.
Sorry, Ben's still recovering from the William Sitwell comment.
I was, yes.
Okay, it's okay. So, as I said, Eva, does it sort of tempt you, as Alan kind of provided a robust and rational critique, to actually say?
I wouldn't know where to pick off from, because we literally have not touched Doctor Who, like, as a family since... Eight years ago, I don't even know when it was.
The deprived. Is it any wonder they've had challenges with their pasties and pizzas?
I think this is the cause.
Yeah, but the thing is, I mean, there's different types of show. I remember there was a show called Stargate. What was it called now? Farscape, and that was a very basically each episode was kind of part of a 13-part or 22-part series. I'm not quite sure how long the show went on for. But I'd watch an episode and I would be completely lost. I wouldn't know who was who.
Five
was
seasons, over 100 episodes, actually.
Yeah, I could, you know, I never followed the show. And when I cut into an episode, I was usually quite lost. That isn't really how Doctor Who currently is.
You can drop in and pick it up.
You can, yeah. It's like Star Trek. You know, the original Star Trek series or even the Next Generation, you could watch any episode and there wasn't... There may be loose continuity connections between the two, and there's this arc which basically just shows a door every now and again, and that's it. That's what the arc is. Each individual episode should reintroduce the characters to you and introduce a new situation to you, and you should be able to pick it up immediately whether you've seen the previous episodes or not.
So there we are, Eva. That's when you return from Paris. That's something you can actually access. In fact, even with devices being what they are, you can take some, you can download some Doctor Who to take with you on the journey.
I think
over.
I'll be meeting the princesses then. Seeing all my princesses.
Yeah, well, there we are. Hannah, I know you're sandwiched between Philistines this morning, it would seem.
Yeah, it's a sad moment. But I will say, if Peter Capaldi isn't your doctor, this is his last series, so...
Oh, thank God.
I will try and work through that comment, but... maybe the new doctor will be more your cup of tea, so give
whoever,
it a try.
Whoever
then.
She or he may
or
be.
Or he is, yes, it's the big debate.
Singer, scholar, festival ambassador, and midweek drivette. It's Eva MacDonald on the Midweek Drive.
Alan, in case you're wondering, it was Andrew Beach, the Doctor Who curator for BBC Worldwide, who joined us on the Stone Tapes last night, which, of course, hasn't been aired as yet because it goes out actually tonight. So there
I'll
we are.
Sure, I'll be sure not to tune in.
Oh, fine. Well, there we are.
Oh, by the way, Vork got a plug in the latest Doctor Who figurine collection, issue 99. Mm-hmm. Basically, it's an interview with David Graham, who I'm sure our fans and family knows a lot about.
Brains, Hiram Hackenbacher. voice of
Parker.
Parker.
Really?
First name Aloysius, by the way. Mm. There's debate with Nick Elliott about did Parker actually have a first name?
Yes, he did. He did.
Car.
It was not Nosy, although in the series it was Nosy, but latterly fan fiction developed Aloysius.
Car Parker.
Thank you. Sometimes, Alan, I don't think you're taking this too serious, as seriously as you might from the
Anyway, David Graham gets an interview in this article, and he mentions the mechanical planet, which is nice.
And so he should, because it's going to be the required listening for Hannah Brown and her family as she actually
He'll be 92 this year.
Harwich.
92.
Exactly. Well, not quite as young as the Duke of Edinburgh, but still, you know, heading in the right direction, which is very important.
How old is the Duke of Edinburgh now?
97, I think.
Of course, he has got the premier medical attention, hasn't he? You know, as it were.
Well.
Hannah Brown, historic Harwich heroine and hyperbolic midweek drivette.
Oh, yeah, actually, just making sure.
That's swearing, isn't it?
What? I did have a jingle which said Hannah Potty Mouth Brown, but I felt actually it was not appropriate. And really,
not a potty mouth.
She keeps her effing and jeffing for off microphone periods. You know, that's the whole thing. The air turns blue. Really, it's quite.
But she says pasty and not
exactly. It's amazing stuff. But Hannah is now going to, in her unique, wonderful manner. Actually, I think we'll give it to Eva, shall we? Because he's heading off to Paris.
Let Eva, do it.
Eva, you might like to ask Alan in French whether he's.
I haven't done French since year 7.
We're trying to cure you of the cold, you see. We're trying to cure you of the cold. Anyway, yes. go for the questions in whichever language you wish.
Which questions? Any questions? Or French ones? Are the last two questions cool? Have you had a fun telephonic link?
I'm not doing it. Yeah, sure, it's great.
The enthusiasm. This is why you love him, isn't it?
It's just, yes.
Exactly. It's just dynamic.
Will you be joining us again soon?
Probably next Thursday, won't it be?
After episode 6, of course.
Yeah, before Sedina again, Fiona's off to Australia.
Well, somebody has to. And let's face it, you know, Australia, where it'll be at this particular time of day, well, they'll almost have been through their Thursday then. They'll be still being, they'll be well into the 9 p.m.
It's all weird.
It's all about time. That's the important thing. We have managed to work our way through the delights of Gabriella Peralta in Gibraltar, Richard Fitzwilliams, Ian Lennox, the fantastic National Smile Month, William Sitwell, of course, and his late grandmother, Alan Stevens. And a whole heap of fine folks, including Millie Hill and the fine Snack Watch boys and the Off-Watt people with respect to that. That has concluded the Midweek Drive morning edition for Lincoln's first community radio station on Thursday, May the 18th, 2017. What do we say now, people?
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Farewell.
I'd say good luck, Hannah. And good luck to Eva as she continues to drive around the streets of Lincolnshire. And Paris.
Remember, I don't think I'm managing
they
Paris.
Drive on the other side of the road there.
That
okay, so it's
me
the
much.
The other side of the road from that perspective. And to Alan Stevens, of course, without Aisha. And what's happening to Aisha and Zukov when Fiona goes off to Australia and you're in the Forest of Dean, just out of interest?
Oh, well, the neighbours look after them.
Ah.
Yeah, we've got a reciprocal agreement with the neighbours. When they go off, we look after their cat, Rory, and when we go off, we look after Zukov and Aisha.
That's wonderful to see, even in Staines, that happy neighbourliness when it comes to pet care. Actually, I thought you would have said they'd go after some cattery somewhere. In fact,
well, I used to go off a cattery, at least hate it, you know, and it's much better if they're in their own territory.
And there
what would happen was they'd go off, we'd come back and pick them up, and they would... I remember we were going to pick up Aisha in that Zukov, and Aisha saw me and sort of set out this huge kind of wah! You could hear right across the compound. And as soon as she saw me, came out of threat, saw me wah! Like an air raid warden. Anyway, we took her back home, and immediately there was
what
a
did she say again,
light.
Alan?
Wah!
Yeah, exactly. Lord above. Yeah, exactly.
We've lost
Ben's
Ben again.
Gone again, exactly. Sometimes. Just when the diamonds are coming out like rolling nuggets, we think, oh, it's just happening one way or the other. We've got Queen, we've got Billy Joel, we're saying goodbye in the studio. Thanks to Eva McDonald, Hannah Brown, and Ben Lewis. And thank you, dear listener, for being with us for however long. Keep on keeping on. Stay tuned to Siren. Lots of heaps of good material coming up, including where's from... yeah, exactly. say where.
If there's a point, if there's a reason
questions.